Those of you who've heard me teach the Bible for a long time know that my favorite way to do that is to take a book of the Bible and go through it paragraph by paragraph. One of my favorite things to do is when I get to the end of the book, to do one message on the whole book at one time. I haven't done it in every case, but in the cases where I've done it, I particularly enjoy doing that. It's one thing to take a book apart. It's another thing to put the book back together. And it's in putting it back together that I get perhaps a bigger insight than just taking away, going through all the details. For example, what's the subject of the book of James? I think the subject is trials. Then how does he develop that subject? In my opinion, the answer is in 1:19, where he says, "Be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, because the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God." Now, it seems to me that verse 19, and I just quoted 19 and 20, is the outline of that whole book. And once you get that big picture, it's easy to think through the book rather than just all the little details in it. It puts those details in a meaningful whole. All right, I've just gone through the book of Proverbs, at least chapters 10 through 31, a topic at a time. So what I would like to do is one message that just puts that whole book together. Well, let me tell you, that is extremely difficult and probably impossible. And it's because of the nature of this book. But let me take a stab at a couple of things. What's the subject of the book of Proverbs? If you don't know that, I have failed as a pastor and as a teacher. What is the subject of this book? Wisdom. We all agree on that? All right, got that much down. How does he develop that? And that's where the problem comes. It seems to me that it is impossible to outline chapters 10 through 31. So I've chosen to deal with it by topics. Now, I guess to do that, I'd have to go through all those topics. And the last time I counted, I think I had 70 of them. There are more, I think. I'm not sure. Some have come up with more. Seems to me those are the major ones. How do you develop the subject of wisdom? I don't know. I gave up. But here's what I did decide to do. Before we leave this book, there are a couple of things about this book you need to know that I think are the takeaways. I call this the great principles in the book of Proverbs. So that what I want to do is just sort of give you what I think is the gut of this book, the great principles in this book. Now, I've mentioned these before, but not very often. And I'm going to do a lot of repetition, and then I'm going to quote a lot of scripture. There's no way you're going to be able to keep up with me by looking at your Bible. So what I want you to do today is sit there and relax. And I want you to walk away with three things I'm going to make very, very clear. If you put these three things in your pocket and think of them every time you open the book of Proverbs, I will be very happy as a teacher. Ready? By the way, there's an exam, and you can only get out the door by... I'm kidding. All right. I want to say two basic things, and under the second thing are those three principles. The first thing I want to say is this, and this is very profound. It's very deep. You're going to have to really think to get this. Are you ready? Here's the first point. Proverbs, the book, consist of Proverbs. Told you it was deep. But that's very important. This is about Proverbs. What's a proverb? This is very important. A proverb is a short, pithy saying stating a general truth. Let me repeat that. A proverb is a short, pithy saying of a general truth. It is not a law. It is not a promise. It is a general truth, which means there could be exceptions. And that's the point. These are not laws like the Ten Commandments. These are proverbs. In the ancient world, proverbs were very common. As a matter of fact, I understand that every nation had their proverbs that people knew. And think about this. In those days, books were rare, and when they did exist, they were expensive. They had to be handwritten. And so people learned by proverbs, and no less than God himself decided that there are proverbs that you need to know. So one of the first things you need to know when you open this book of proverbs is that it's full of proverbs. Now that got me to thinking, if this is such an effective way of teaching, what teachers have I had that use proverbs to teach? I guess your first teacher is your parent. And I couldn't think of a proverb. My mother taught me all kinds of things, but I don't remember her having a proverb. The only thing I remember my mother saying that even came close was more like a slogan. Every time I left the house, be careful. Did your parents tell you that? I got sick of hearing it. All right, mother, I know I'm leaving. Be careful. That was her favorite little saying, but it's not a proverb. But two of the professors I had did use proverbs. Not all. Of all the professors I ever had, I can only remember two that had proverbs. One was a fellow named Howard Hendricks. He seasoned his lectures with proverbs. So I looked up some of them. Some of them I remembered. Some of them are not necessarily original, but he used them. For example, he said, "It is not where you are, it's the direction in which you're headed." He said, "You can impress from a distance, but you can only impact up close. It's a sin to bore people with the Bible." Now keep in mind, he's lecturing to men who are going to be pastors. And one of his little proverbs was, "It's a sin to bore people with the Bible." I've quoted that many times. I forgot he said it until I looked it up. He also said, and this one he probably got from somebody else, "Leaders are readers and readers are leaders." And then, "Most people don't think, they just rearrange their prejudices." Ooh, I like that one. And then he said, "Never traffic in unpracticed truth." Now those were from a professor all of us enjoyed because his lectures were so interesting. But the man that probably, of my professors, that had the greatest impact on me from a practical point of view was one of my professors named Haddon Robinson. And he sprinkled his lessons with life lessons. For example, he said, "Never make decisions in the midst of a mood." Boy, I've used that a lot, not only personally, but I've been talking to other people who were going through a crisis, and I would say to them, "Sleep on this. Don't make any decisions until some time passes." And it depends on the nature of the crisis. But sometimes the crisis, you need to recover in terms of weeks and months and not just days. But don't make a decision in the midst of a mood. But then he said this, one of the ones that startled me. He said, "Some things are worth doing poorly." Now you've heard, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing right. He said, there are some things worth doing poorly. Now, what he meant by that is you can't put the same amount of time and energy into everything you do. So there are some things you choose to do, and all you can do is do it not to your very best, but it still needs to be done. So some things, that's been very helpful. That's not a bad piece of advice. It takes away some of the guilt because you didn't do it like you thought you could have if you'd had more time. At any rate, that was one of his proverbs. Another was, "The opposite of faith is not doubt, it's disobedience." Moving right along, that one's convicting. The other person I know of that used proverbs is my brother, who is retired now, but in counseling, he had a couple that he's repeated to me over and over, He's got more than this, but these two were, God does not do things to you, he does things for you. And he uses it when he's talking to people who are going through something and they think, why is God allowing this to happen? What is God doing to me? He's not. He's doing it for you. The other one that he uses is treat others the way God treats you. Ooh, that's a good. Think about that. Now, my point is this. Proverbs are a type of literature. They're a type of written material that have been around for thousands and thousands of years. And it's so important that God wrote a whole book full of them. This is not a bad way to teach, and it's not a bad way to learn. Matter of fact, I would suggest, do you have any personal proverbs? That would be interesting. Every once in a while, I'm tempted to pass out 3x5 cards and you write on them. I think it'd be interesting. Do you have personal proverbs? I don't think I have any. People who are close to me that repeat back to me what I've taught come up with a couple. I've never thought of them as proverbs, but it's the closest thing I think I have to proverbs. And one of them is, trials are for your training. Have you ever heard me say that? Okay, that, if I have a proverb, that's it. The other one, the one that's my favorite is, think biblically. You ever heard me say that? If you have never heard me say that, you hadn't hung around me very long. Or even better, think contextually. Think in terms of the total passage, not just in some isolated details. But my point is this. Proverbs are proverbs, and they're very important in learning and teaching. By the way, as I've gone through this book, has any proverb jumped out at you? Has any proverb stuck with you? Don't answer that. I don't want to embarrass you. But seriously, I'm going to quote two that have stuck with me. And frankly, I knew this before I started the book, but now I've got a verse to hang it on. One that I really like is this. The first one to plead his cause seems right until his neighbor comes along and examines him. 18:17. Or something similar in the same chapter. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is a folly and a shame to him. So, I think you need personal proverbs perhaps, but you certainly need to focus on some of the proverbs. It is an excellent way to learn truth, even God's truth. So collect some proverbs. Matter of fact, that will help crystallize your value system. Having those kind of proverbs could crystallize what you think is important. I think this is particularly true or important if you are a parent. If you are a parent with small children, I would highly recommend that you formulate some proverbs or use some proverbs in the book of Proverbs and repeat them all the time to ad nauseum till your kids get it and they can't forget it, that they just remember, Mama used to say. They might not like it now, but you need to bury it in their brain till they never forget it. So use proverbs for yourself and for others. So my first point is, the book of Proverbs contains proverbs. Now, let me say one more thing about that. And that is this. Written material comes in different shapes and sizes, forms. For example, a simple little example is you could get a receipt, you could get a contract, or you could get a love letter. Would the form of that writing dictate the way you read it? Would it? I mean, if you got a receipt, what are you interested in? The total. Or maybe the price of one item in it. That's it. You got it. It's real simple. That's all you need. If you got a contract, what do you need? A lawyer. We need to look at the fine print. You want them, and then what you probably need are two lawyers, and you'll discover they disagree with each other. But anyway, that's a little different task than just reading a receipt. And then if you read a love letter, what would you do? Oh, that just changes everything, especially if it's written to you. Well, the Bible is like that. Think about this. The Bible is a piece of written material called literature. And there are different types of literature or types of writings in this book. Just think about it. The number one type of literature in this book is a story. It's a historical account, but it's a story. I think God's favorite way to communicate truth is tell stories. That's why I tell stories. If you hung around me personally, you'd hear me tell stories. That's God's way of teaching. If you took the stories out of the Bible, it'd be a much smaller book. The Bible is full of stories. But then there are other types of things in the Bible. There's poetry in the Bible. The whole book of Psalms is poetry, and so are other major books in the Bible. So you need to then know a little bit about understanding poetry. For one thing, poetry expresses emotion more than other types of written material. And then, of course, there's a proverb. There is prophecy. There is parables. And then, of course, the Bible has a bunch of letters in it. And my point is that proverb is one type of written material in a book of different types of material. And one of the things you need to know as you're reading the Bible is what type of written material are you reading and how does that relate? Well, that's what I want to talk about next. I said there were two things I was going to do. Number one, in summarizing the book of Proverbs, the first is it's Proverbs. The second is I think that it contains three great principles. I did not say three great proverbs. I'm after the principles that are underneath those proverbs. So I want to lay them out. Now, I'm going to throw a lot of material at you, proverbs, but I want to make three main points. So when I get all done with this, I want you to be able to give me back my three main points. You ready? Point one. The nature of Proverbs is you have a choice. If you read the book of Proverbs, the point, underneath the point, is you have a choice to make. Now, what does that look like? Well, the nature of a proverb, I said, is a pithy saying of a general truth. And now I'm going to add, it is a pithy saying of a general truth that gives you a choice. Embedded in the whole concept of a proverb, especially the way many of the proverbs are written in this book, is you have a choice. For example, you have a choice between going your way or God's way. Let me just give you. Option one is trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your path. The Hebrew lexicon, the one that is the authority on Hebrew, Brown, Driver, and Briggs, says that the Aramaic word behind the Hebrew word for trust was originally the idea of throw yourself down on the ground to lie extended on the ground. It's the picture of lying helpless, face down on the ground. So trusting the Lord is throwing yourself upon Him. So that's one option. You can trust the Lord. You can throw the issue on Him. I highly recommend that. It's trust the Lord with all your heart. That is, concentrate your whole inner being on His activity and promises. The other option is that you can lean on your own understanding. And in this passage, understanding is that which is opposite of God's understanding. Years ago, there was a fellow named Bill Gothard. How many of you remember Bill Gothard? You're showing your age. Only a couple of hands went up. He did seminars all over the country. Thousands of people would gather at the auditorium and he would lecture. I remember he spoke in a monotone. He wasn't a very dramatic speaker, but he was just, because of what he said, was just riveting. People sat on the edge of their seat for sometimes 8 hours at a time as he lectured. And he talked like this. And then one of the things he said was, if you want to know the will of God, just figure out what you would do and then do the opposite. Now, I think that's not always the case, but I thought, what an interesting way to remember that particular proverb and the point that he was trying to make. So, one of the choices you have is between going your way or God's way. But again, in the book of Proverbs, there is a choice between being wise and being foolish. For example, one possibility says, a wise son makes glad a glad father, and a foolish son is the grief of his mother. Now, one of the things that says is this starts young. But it gives you a choice. The way you live has an impact on your parents. If you live a wise life, then they're both, not just this verse, but others in the book, express the idea they're going to be happy. And if you live a foolish life, it's going to grieve them. And in this particular case, it highlights the mother. Perhaps it impacts her more than the father. At any rate, it impacts both. And one possibility is that you live a wise life. And the other possibility is you live a foolish life. And that has an impact on your parents. Matter of fact, maybe one of the tests of whether or not you've lived a wise or foolish life is ask, what impact has your life had on your parents? If they're happy with you, you probably did some right things. And if they're not, you probably did some wrong things. This is a proverb, not a law. Some parents are unrealistic, but as a general rule, that holds true. Let me give you another possibility. According to the book of Proverbs, you can either live a righteous life or a wicked life. One choice is to live a righteous life. Proverbs 12:5 says, the thoughts of the righteous are right, but the counsel of the wicked are deceitful. The Hebrew word thoughts here includes more than just your thinking. It includes your plans, your devices, but the thoughts, the plans of the righteous are right. They live a righteous life. Another choice is that you live a wicked life. The counsel of the wicked are deceitful. That is, when a wicked person gives you some advice or when they talk, they're very often being deceitful. They have a selfish purpose, not your best interest at heart. So, the point I'm making is very simple. This is point one I want you to remember. And point one is, you have a choice. Now I have a confession to make. I've done something teaching this book that I do not recall ever doing quite like it. Namely this. It seems to me that what I've just said is just in virtually every verse, beginning at chapter 10 for sure. And very often you're given the choice between two things in the same verse. Now that's not always true, but it's true over and over and over and over again. Now what I did that's different is I did not follow the natural pattern of this book. Had I, then I would have preached the topics a little differently. What I did is I took the choice and separated the two, so I preached one whole sermon on the Lord. I preached one sermon on being wise. I preached another on being a fool. I preached one on being righteous. I preached one on being wicked. So as I was going through it, it dawned on me, you've taken the tension out of the verses. You've taken the choice out. Now, at the same time, I trust I was making it clear that your choice is to be wise or stupid. That's the meaning of the word. Or righteous or wicked or following the Lord or yourself. But I think if I were going to teach this book like it's written, I would have taken the Proverbs and shown you every time how there's a choice involved. Now, of course, the problem with that is there are 915 verses in the book. And it took me a year and a half to go through it. If I did 915 verses, well, I just thought you'd be better off with doing it just the topic the way I did it. But I want to point out before we leave this book that the book is written in such a way is to give you a choice. Now, all of Scripture is like that. The stories in the Scripture are like that. The parables in the Scriptures are like that. It's just not as obvious as it is in the book of Proverbs. It can't get any plainer than trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding, there's the choice. And that's embedded, I say, in the book of Proverbs from beginning to end. All right, that's point one. You have a choice. Number two, choices have a consequence. Again, this is not in every verse, but it just seems to me that if you read the book, one of the things that comes through loud and clear over and over is that you have a choice and choices have consequences. For example, I said you can choose to go your way or God's way. Let me tell you the consequences, according to the book of Proverbs, if you go God's way. You ready for this? Now, this is where I'm going to quote a lot of Proverbs. I isolated seven, and there are many more. But just hear this list. Number one, interesting, you end up with a knowledge of God. Chapter 2, verse 2 says, when will you understand the fear of the Lord and find, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. So the consequence of having a relationship with God, in this case, fearing Him, gives you a knowledge of Him. So that's one consequence of the book of Proverbs, of knowing the Lord. Number two, you gain wisdom. This is all over the place. 1:7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Chapter 9, verse 10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So you gain a knowledge of the Lord and you gain wisdom. That's a consequence. Third is a departure from evil. 3:7 says, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. Or it says in chapter 8, verse 13, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance and evil, and the way of the perverse mouth. Again, in 16:6, in mercy and truth, atonement is provided for iniquity, and by the fear of the Lord, one departs from evil. So you have wisdom, and you have enough sense to depart from evil. The fourth consequence of following the Lord is peace. 15:16 says, better is a little in the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble. And of course, the word trouble here has the idea of turmoil or disturbance or confusion. And the opposite of that would be peace. So better is having a little materially and a relationship with the Lord, because you will have peace rather than not doing that and having turmoil or trouble. Number five, you will feel secure. Proverbs 14:26 says, in the fear of the Lord there is strong confidence, and his children will have a place of refuge. The fear of the Lord, there is strong confidence. That comes from the Hebrew word that means security. That when you are walking with the Lord, there is the sense of security you don't have when you are not. Six, praise. Proverbs 31:30 says, charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Now that's in chapter 31 where It's usually said this is about the virtuous woman. I think it's better translated the excellent woman. And she will be praised. And in the context, she will be praised by her husband and by her children. So that's one of the consequences of the choice of living a wise, spiritual, godly life. One more. Prolonged life. 10:27 says, "The fear of the Lord prolongs days, but the years of the wicked will be shortened." 14:27 says, "The fear of the Lord is the fountain of life, to turn one away from the snares of death." 19:23 says, "The fear of the Lord leads to life, and he who has it abides in satisfaction. He will not be visited with evil." And 22:4 says, "By humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life." So there it is. You like that list? These are the consequences of making wise, godly choices. Let me repeat them. You'll get to know the Lord. You'll have wisdom. You'll depart from evil. Peace, a sense of security. People will praise you, and you'll live longer. But then there's another possibility. The possibility of going your own way. What happens if you go your own way? I don't have enough time to go through all the proverbs that describe all the misery of you going your own way, but let me just give you this one. Proverbs 14:12 says, "There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death." In the context of the book of Proverbs, it seems to me that he's saying, if you walk with the Lord, there is life and abundant life. And if you do not walk with the Lord, there is the realm of death. And sometimes it's talking about physical death. It's not talking about eternal death. It's talking about the realm of death. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, the Apostle Paul talks about a woman living in sin and she's dead while she lives. There's the concept of death in the Bible, that it's living in the realm of death. It's the opposite of the realm of life. So there's a contrast in the Bible between light and darkness, and there's a contrast in the Bible between life and death. So if you're not walking with the Lord, you're not walking in light, and you're not walking in life. You're walking in darkness and you're walking in death with all the ramifications of that, where there is no peace, or for that matter, long life or security, or all the things that come with walking with the Lord. And at the top of the list in this book would be wisdom. So you have a choice. You can walk with the Lord or you can go your own way, but you need to know that choice has consequences. Let me give you another possibility. You have a choice. You can live a wise life or a foolish life. But what you need to know is that those have consequences. What are the consequences of living a wise life? 1:5 says, "A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel." 24:5 says, "A wise man is strong. Yes, a man of knowledge increases strength." 16:21, "The wise in heart will be called prudent, and sweetness of lips increases learning." 3:35, "The wise shall inherit glory, but shame will be the legacy of fools." So those are all the consequences of choosing to be wise. There are consequences to choosing to be a fool. 10:8 says, "The wise in heart will receive commandments, but a plotting fool will fall. He who winks with the eye causes trouble, but a prating fool will fall." That's 10:10. And 11:29, "He who troubles his own house will inherit the wind, and the fool will be a servant to the wise man." So, there are consequences. There's consequences to living a wise life, and there are consequences to living a foolish life. I said you had choices. You had choices between following the Lord or doing your own way. You have choice between wise and fool, and you have a choice between righteous and wicked. And now I want to suggest there are consequences to those three things. There's consequences to living a righteous life, and there are consequences to living a wicked life. For example, the consequences of being righteous. 11:5. The righteous of the blameless will direct his way aright, but the wicked will fall by his own wickedness. 11:6. The righteous of the upright will deliver them, but the unfaithful will be caught in their lust. 13:6. Righteousness guards him whose way is blameless, but wickedness overthrows the sinner. 11:8. The righteous is delivered from trouble, and it comes to the wicked instead. And I could go on and on and on and on. There are consequences to living a righteous life. There are also consequences to living a wicked life. 10:2 says, treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivers from death. 12:26 says, the righteous shall choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. 5:22 says, his own iniquities entrap the wicked man, and he is caught in the cords of his sin. I could go on and on and on. One more. I got a whole list. The curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked. How about that one? You want that one? So, the point I'm making is simply this. Two things so far. Number one, you have a choice. And number two, choices have consequences. I think every time you read this book, those two things ought to jump out off of every page. That you ought to read this book with that in mind. What are the choices he's giving me, and what are the consequences of those choices? I said there were three things I wanted you to remember. I just gave you two. I'm going to give you the third. You ready for this? You can control the choice, but you cannot control the consequences. Now, this takes a little discussion. And the reason is, that, like I said, there are exceptions to Proverbs. So this might not happen in every case. For one thing, these are not absolute laws. They're Proverbs. For another, maybe you could start down the wrong road and make a U-turn. You could start down that road, and if you read Proverbs, say, whoops, I'm going in the wrong direction, and turn around and go in the other direction. So in that case, the consequences aren't inevitable. You could, perhaps, prevent the consequences. Matter of fact, Proverbs 16:6 says, in mercy and truth, atonement is provided for iniquity, and by the fear of the Lord, one departs from evil. Now, I think it's interesting that it talks about truth, mercy, atonement. Of course, the New Testament is abundant with that. It expands and explains that. That God, in his grace and mercy, sent his Son to die to pay for sin. And when we trust him, we can be changed and we can go in a different direction with his power. So, I don't want to say this is an absolute. It is not. But, having said that, the whole point of the book of Proverbs, it's a general truth, but it happens. And that is, you start down one sin, down one road, and it becomes very difficult not to turn around. Jesus said, he who sins is a slave of sin. You start down that road and you get in bondage to that sin. You become a slave to it. You can't stop it. And so then you encounter the consequences. Listen to 24:16. For a righteous man may fall seven times and rise again, but the wicked shall fall by calamity. You see, if you chose the right way, that doesn't mean you're going to be perfect. You'll make a mistake, but you'll get up. Whereas if you go down the way of wickedness, you're going to fall. And perhaps there is no coming back if you've gone too far down that road. Proverbs 26:12 says, "Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him." Or 26:11, "As a dog returns to his vomit, so a fool repeats his folly." What's that saying? Saying that if you go down that road of stupidity again and again and again, it becomes an entrenched habit. And it is extremely difficult to turn around. So consequences cannot be reversed, usually. So you have a choice, and choices have consequences, but you can choose the decision you make. You cannot control the consequences of that decision. Matter of fact, the book of Proverbs recognizes there comes a point when it's too late and even impossible for someone to turn around and correct their course. Hear me, and hear me well. Don't go down that road, because there could come a point where it will be impossible for you to turn around. That is in the first chapter of this book. Let me read it to you. "They shall call upon me." And in chapter 1, the me is the personification of wisdom. "And I will not answer. They shall seek me diligently, but they will not find me, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, and have none of my counsel and despise my reproof." Wow. Lady Wisdom is saying that when people who have rejected her get into deep trouble, they will call to her for help and she will not answer. That's chapter 1, verse 28. "They will seek wisdom even diligently and they will not find her." That's chapter 1, again, verse 28. Wisdom will not hear because they did not hear her. Wisdom will disregard them because they disregarded wisdom. Or to put it as bluntly as the book of Proverbs can say it, he who is often reproved and hardens his neck will be suddenly destroyed, and that without remedy. Did you hear that? 29:1. He who is often reproved and hardens his neck suddenly will be destroyed, and that without remedy. A moment ago, I quoted Howard Hendricks, who had some proverbs. This was one of his proverbs. Maybe it's where I learned it and then discovered it in the book of Proverbs. He had several different ways he said it, but the way he said it was this: "You're free to make choices. You're not free to escape the consequences." Or he'd say, "You can control your choices, but you can't control the outcome of those choices." Or again, he would say that again and again and again. So let me illustrate. You ready? You can go to the 10th floor of a 10-story building, and you can jump off. You have that choice. But there are consequences, and you cannot control the consequences of landing. So let me repeat. You have choices. Choices have consequences. You can control the choice. You cannot control the consequence. How are we doing? Got it? Put that in your pocket, purse, brain, heart. It's the ticket for getting out of here, you know. The book of Proverbs teaches us anything. It teaches us, by the way, repetition is one of the laws of learning. And there are proverbs that are repeated. I started to put that in the list. One of the things I learned from Proverbs, it's okay to repeat things. Good, I'm going to do it. You have choices. Choices have consequences. You can control the choice, but you can't control the consequence. Teach that to your children. Teach that to yourself. Teach that to your friends. That, it seems to me, are the three great lessons of Proverbs. All right, I want to conclude. I'm not done. I want to conclude by giving you some suggestions. You want to be wise? You want to be stupid? No hands. All right, I'm going to give you three ways to be wise. You ready? This is simple stuff. Number one, make wise choices. Was that brilliant or what? Listen to this. Proverbs 1:7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. 3:5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. If you want to be a wise person, then what you need to do is stick your nose in this book and trust the Lord. 3:5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your understanding. That's point one. Point two, read Proverbs. When I was a young Christian, I heard people say that if you read one chapter of Proverbs every day, that you would read the whole book through in a month. Why? Because there are 31 chapters in Proverbs and many months have 31 days. So if on day one you read chapter one, on day two you read chapter two, on day three you read chapter three, you'd read the whole book through, except on leap year in February. All right? I did not do that. I have not done that. And I regret that. Well, how long would it take to read one chapter? I want to challenge you. Read a chapter of Proverbs first thing in the morning. Eat breakfast or have a cup of coffee. Read one chapter. Is that asking too much? I have a friend who's done that for years. And talking to him is really interesting. He'll bring up a proverb like I'd bring up James, which is my favorite book in the Bible. That I know James, but he knows Proverbs. And I am really impressed. Every time I talk to him, he pops up this proverb. All right. I have a third suggestion. You ready? What was the first one? Make wise choices. What's the second one? Read Proverbs. Matter of fact, they used to give invitations to come forward. Maybe this would be a good Sunday to sing an invitation hymn and come down here and make a decision that you're going to read the Word. By the way, there's no substitute for that. Just read the Word. But I have a third suggestion. You got to think about this for a second. This is very important. If you want to be wise, then make wise choices by considering the consequences. Think about this. Think about the consequences. I heard a radio talk show host talk this week, or maybe it was last week, and he said, and he's been doing this he's an elderly man, he's been doing it for generations, decades at least, I should say, and he said, this generation considers consequences less than any generation I've ever seen. Boy, that's true, isn't it? So work backwards. Start with the consequences. Another way to say that is start with the goal. I do this all the time when I'm talking to people in counseling. They sit down and dump a problem on me and they're all torn up as about what to do. And I simply say to them, what's the goal? Which is another way of saying, what's the consequence? You tell me the goal or the consequence and I'll tell you how to get there. Suppose I wanted to take a trip and I couldn't decide. I was all torn up. I was very bothered and I came to you for counsel and I said, I just can't make up my mind. Should I take Interstate 5 or should I take Interstate 10? Which should I do? What would I do? What should I do? And you say, are you kidding me? It depends on where you want to go. If you take Interstate 5, you're going to end up in San Diego or San Francisco. And if you take Interstate 10, You're going to end up in Phoenix or Houston or Jacksonville, Florida. So tell me where you want to go and I'll tell you what street to take. That's the book of Proverbs. There are consequences. So maybe you should start with the consequence and work backward and say, I want this end, then the choice is easy. You want to be a godly person? You want to be a wise person? Then you don't, if you make that decision, that's my goal. I want to be Christ-like. I want to be a godly person. I want to be wise and righteous. Then you don't cheat on a test and you don't cheat on your taxes. It's that simple. The conclusion, the consequence, the goal made the decision real easy. That is the book of Proverbs. So my advice is be wise. Make wise choices by considering the consequences. Father, thank you for this down-to-earth, common sense, practical book. But Lord, we confess that we sometimes just ignore it. Sometimes seems like it's so obvious that we want more profound stuff. So Lord, direct our attention to your word, especially this portion of it, so that we may be wise, righteous, godly people. In Jesus' name, amen.